Do you believe in ghosts? I sort of do. I'd love to see one. I've never served in a church where my staff hasn't insisted that there are ghosts. And I sort of laid in wait late at night in the parts of the church where they said there are ghosts, just waiting to see if I could catch one out of the corner of my eye. I've not been able to convince myself that I saw one. I think maybe once, twice, but I'm never really sure that I've gotten to see one. Do you believe in angels? Do I believe in ghosts? Do I believe in angels? Do I believe in the reality of things that are written about that I can't see with my own eye? It's a really important question, especially in church these days. Do I believe in things that are written about, but that I can't see with my own eye? There's an old line among scientists. Do you believe in electrons? Can't see an electron. You just can't, right? But you like electricity, and it works. So we believe in electrons, but we're not so sure about this angel and ghost stuff. Let me be a little bit more interesting. Do you believe in photons? Or do you believe in waves? So is light a particle or is light a wave? You can't explain a rainbow except that you understand light as a wave. Just, you can't make a rainbow unless you say light is a wave made up of different wavelengths of different colors. I like solar cells. If you get a magazine from the diocese in coffee hour, you'll see that we really like the idea of solar cells. And you can't make a solar cell work unless you think of light as a particle. Right? So that's a big question. How does light know when it's supposed to work like a particle when it's hitting a solar cell? And how does light know when it's supposed to work like a wave when you see it after a rainstorm? Nobody knows. But light knows we're looking. It's just a big question. Have you ever heard about Schrödinger's cat? Yeah, the real thing about Schrödinger's cat, how does the cat know we're looking so it can be dead or alive? That's the paradox. How does it know we're looking? How does light know we're looking so it's a particle or a wave? You want to blow your mind some more? When I was in grad school, there was this thing called a phonon. And a phonon is the particle of sound. So I know what sound is. I can't do it on this. You hear that? I'm going to rip my cross off doing that. You hear that sound? That's because I've made a percussive force and it sets up all kinds of vibrations. And if it wasn't for this cloth, you'd hear it out in the church. It's a wave. I understand that wave. It's a lot easier to understand than an electron magnetic wave, but that I understand. You can treat that wave as a particle. And you can do phonon-phonon scattering. I don't understand how that works, but it does. Sometimes it's a particle, sometimes it's a wave. Sometimes a photon, light, is a particle, sometimes it's a wave. And they're both true. Are you your body? Or are you your mind? Right? We got this duality. There's this natural duality in reality. And we kind of know about it, but we don't stop and think about it. Is a nation a bunch of people, or is a nation a shared idea? Is the United States of America, the 350 million people who live here, or is it the Constitution that creates us as a people? Is it an idea? Is Israel, the Israel of the Bible, is it the people who are the physical descendants of Abraham, or is it the idea of a morally aware God who cares about how we treat the people who are on the margins? Is Israel a story? A story about a people and their history? Or is Israel the actual physical embodiment? Yes. It's like a photon. Is a photon a particle or a wave? Yes. Is a phonon, is a wave, a sound, particle? Yes. Are we body or are we mind? Yes, we are both things. All right, ready? Yeah, I'm going to get to the point here. You just got to trust me. I'm going to land this plane. Trust me. So, can an idea be conscious? We don't know what consciousness is. We don't know it scientifically. We don't know it philosophically. But we think we're conscious. We are pretty sure animals are conscious. They can feel pain. They can feel sorrow. They're emotionally aware. There's this idea that's out there that we don't sort of really take too seriously, but maybe we should, that the earth is conscious, that there is this reality of God's creation that has an awareness, that anything God has made and created has the ability to be conscious. It's the breath of God, if you want to use theological language. Right? Can the story of the people of Israel, the idea that makes Israel, can it be conscious? Yes. You know what we call it? Michael. That's what an angel kind of is, at least to my thinking. Right? It is the personification of a people. And in the Bible, we talk about each nation having its own angel. There is an angel for Israel. Its name is Michael. There is an angel for the nation of Babylon. And Michael defeated that angel. There was a war on earth, but there was a reflection of that war in heaven. And the angels fought. Is a light a particle or a wave? Well, it depends how you look. Is there a war in heaven or a war on earth? Well, it kind of depends how you look. There's a spiritual quality to warfare. There's a spiritual quality reality. So every now and then I get invited down to the war college down in Newport. And I remember one time I was there hearing the chief of naval operations. And he said, a strategy is a shared story that allows people to accomplish amazing things. A strategy is a shared story that allows people to accomplish amazing things. It's kind of like what I'm saying an angel is. So, in the Bible, each nation has its own angel. And it's kind of the hypostases, the personification of that nation. We think about evil as having a force, right? And we name the name of that force Satan. Right? That's what we mean when we're talking about that. It's this idea that reality is way more complicated than we might think. And that maybe these things that are true have their own sense of consciousness. So in the Bible, when they talk about warfare, spiritual warfare, they talk about angels fighting against each other. And in the book of Revelations, which is what we're reading this feast day of St. Michael and all angels, we hear about a war in heaven. And Michael and the dragon are fighting. And Michael throws down the dragon. Now, in the time that Revelations was written, the dragon probably in their mind meant Rome. That they were an enslaved people, a conquered people, and that God was fighting for them spiritually just as they were trying to overcome the Romans. But it was as if there was a war in heaven. So who won that war, by the way? Who's still around? Is there any Roman Empire around anymore? Are the people of Israel still gathering in synagogues across the world and praying to God every Sabbath? Michael won and threw down the dragon. How did it happen? It's a spiritual warfare. It wasn't a physical battle because the people of Israel kept losing the wars against Rome. Horribly so. But the ideas of Israel triumphed over the empire of Rome. Now, the dragon in Revelations probably refers to Babylon as well, because they were one of the first nations that conquered Israel and took them into captivity. And the ideas of Israel conquered the people of Babylon. And they allowed the Israelites to come back to Israel and rebuild the temple and reconstitute themselves. Ideas matter, and they allow us to conquer in ways we wouldn't understand. And if you want to think about angels not as kind of like this thing that you sort of buy in a gift shop, but if you want to think about angels the way the Bible talks about them, you want to think about angels as the personification of the web of relationships and ideas that make an individual and make a nation. Jesus says in the Bible, you and I all have a guardian angel. He says we have a quality to our lives that is in God's eye like an idea that has a consciousness that walks beside us. We all have angels. And it's not a fluffy thing with wings and everything, because angels didn't look like they had wings till the Middle Ages. That's art. That's not reality. But it's an amazing thing. So, you know, you believe in electrons, right? You believe in photons, you believe in phonons, you should believe in phonons. You should believe in angels. There are three things that you need to keep in mind if you believe in angels. Three really important things. I hope I remember them. I'm not working with a script here, so it's a little scary. All right, three really important things about angels. One, that when we are in conflict with one another, there is a spiritual nature to everything. That we are not just these human bodies, but we are beings of light that God has created and have angelic qualities. And so when we stand up against things, know that ultimately God is present in this in some way. Right? It's so boring if you just deny that. You remember Thomas Jefferson? Right. Sort of the great mind of the Enlightenment. Do you know what Jefferson did to his Bible? He cut out all the parts of the Bible that were about angels and grace and miracles, because he thought that part was dumb. A modern human being should not believe in that kind of stuff. So Jefferson got rid of it all. Ah! And yet, there is this spiritual quality. We believe in it profoundly and fundamentally. That's one. Number two, if this is true, and there are these angel beings, and it means that there's this ladder of creation, and way down there are the eukaryotic bacteria, right? The eukaryotes and the bacteria, and then there's plankton, and then there's plants, and then, you know, there's like this whole ladder, and way, way up at the top, there are the seraphim and the cherubim, and principalities and powers and thrones and dominions and archangels and angels and humans, and then, I don't know, mammals and rabbits and sheep and snakes and frogs and the whole thing, right? It's a giant ladder of creation. You and I are not the top. Which means the whole creation does not serve us. That's really important for us to remember. Right? Because one way of translating Genesis is God made us, said we were very good. That's true. And then we have dominion over all the earth. That's a bad translation. It really should say we have stewardship. We were created to be God's helpers in the garden. We were not created to be God's replacement in the garden. Which means we have to care for the earth. The idea that there are angels, that there is this realm of reality that is beyond our immediate experience, means that we're not the top. And that's a good place not to be. We're somewhere in the middle. And being somewhere in the middle, we have a special responsibility to care for those who are below us, just as those who are above us in creation care for us. It's an extraordinary thing. And here's the big one, right? You ready? If you're taking notes, you probably want to write this one down. How do you conquer an angel? So Rome had an angel, right? And Michael contends with the angel, and Jesus contends with the angel, and Jesus overthrows the angel. Jesus even overthrows the angel of death. How does Jesus do that? By the blood of the Lamb. It's a funny word that the Revelation uses. By the blood of the Lamb that God has conquered. Now that word lamb is a little fluffy thing, right? Right? But in Greek, that lamb word is even smaller. It's a diminutive of lamb in the Greek, and it's really lambikins. I mean, it's the best way to translate it, right? By the blood of the lambikins, we win. And what it means is that God's self-sacrificial act of love, God's willingness to be on the cross, God's willingness to die for all of us, and whatever that means, that act of self-sacrificial love has conquered everything, has destroyed the angels, have destroyed the angel of Rome, destroying the angels of Nazi Germany, destroyed all the angels of evil that rebel against God, destroyed death forever by an act of self-giving love. And then if you look carefully, you should do this after I'm done preaching. You look carefully at that passage in Revelation because it goes on, and those who did not cling to their life, those who were willing to do the same kind of thing that Jesus did, to serve the poor, to give of themselves, to share, they also conquer. So if you believe in Michael and you believe in angels, what you want to know is there is a way for us to win a spiritual battle, which could be the same as a real battle, and it is to love your enemy, to love your neighbor. Dr. King talks about this. The Bible talks about this. We should try it sometime. It might work. Because this other warfare stuff, it's not working really well. And the shouting and the yelling, that's not working either. What if we actually acted like angels existed? And that there was spiritual warfare? And instead of trying to fight things with logic and memes and TV and marches, we tried to fight things with love, self-giving love, non-violent resistance. What Dr. King showed us had an incredible power in the world. What if we did that? Then we would win. Because there was a war in heaven, and Michael overcame the dragon and threw him down because of the sacrifice of the Lamb of God. This altar, right? Bread, wine, poured out, broken, given to us, an act of self-giving love. Those are the tools that God has given us so that we can defeat the spiritual powers that rebel against God and enslave God's peoples, that can destroy the empires of the world, not on the field of battle, but in the heavenly places. Because our angel, the angel of the people of God, has won and is always winning by love and by the way of love. The other ways don't work so well. We are called to be children of the way, what Jesus calls the way of love. Amen.